Hello and welcome to this week's Health and Self-Care podcast. I'm Dr. Peter Bagshaw, a GP in Somerset, and I'm delighted to be joined by my friend and colleague,
Dr. Andrew Trusilla, another GP by background, also living in Somerset.
And Andrew, you are our expert today on our subject, which is coping with change in an uncertain world. And I can say expert, although you laugh at that, because you've written a book on it.
Peter, you're very kind. I've written a book called Health and Self-Care, which has got lots of contributions from other people. I always worry about the word expert because I was told many years ago that an expert is defined as X is an unknown quantity and a spurt is a drip under pressure. So I always resist being called that. And that's not to denigrate any experts in their fields around the country in many areas. But I worry about it when anybody calls me that.
Oh, well. Well, we'll see in the next 30 minutes, won't we? So people can make their own judgment. But I think you are. Anyway, we thought this would be a good subject to deal with because there's a lot of uncertainty at the moment, both in the world and for a lot of people with their jobs as well. And it just feels a very difficult time at the moment. So what would your top tips be for us to navigate this world?
Oh, really interesting. So, Peter, you're quite right. There is so much change around. And actually, change in little bits is a part of our lives. We grow, we have experiences, and they say that what doesn't break you makes you stronger. So people who've gone through really difficult times afterwards often say, gosh, that was really tough, but I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm glad I managed my way through that. Human beings are adaptable, we are resilient, and we actually thrive and benefit from the challenge of changes. But we need downtime in between the effort of change. And it certainly seems these days, Peter, as though the change is relentless in the world and threatening at times.
It feels that way. And whether that is a reflection of what's actually going on, or whether it's just that we have access to everything that's happening in the whole world 24/7. I don't know. Maybe it's that's a subject we shouldn't get into, but it's certainly the perception. So I've heard one of the techniques for coping with change is just don't watch the news and be in touch with social media all the time. I don't know if you think that's wise advice or is that burying our heads in the sand?
Somebody said to me many years ago, I would agree entirely that avoiding noxious stimuli is certainly one approach to being overwhelmed. And many years ago, somebody said to me that that much marketing, and you could include news and emotional reporting in that, much marketing is designed to make us unhappy with what we've got and who we are and how we are. And is based on fear or worry or shame or jealousy. So the challenge with when we see advertising or marketing or social media or anything is to work out that 95% of it is either not relevant to us or not beneficial, and 5% may be useful. The challenge is to discriminate between the two, but not to overwhelm ourselves with volume.
And speaking of discrimination, that reminds me of that famous saying, doesn't it, where you learn the difference between what you can influence and what you can't, and the wisdom to tell between them. So that to me is another way of dealing with change, is recognizing that some things we can have agency over and some things we just have to roll with and accept. Is that something that you find useful?
Absolutely, Peter. I think if we feel centered, still, grounded, and we feel we have some power over a situation, that makes changing times very easy to cope with. When we feel ungrounded, when we feel in turmoil, when we're driven by fear, that's when change is really challenging and it can actually threaten us a bit. So just to remind ourselves what Trevor Griffiths, who developed emotional logic, says. He says that a variable amount of stress can stimulate the immune system and brain, especially when the capacity remains for personal responsiveness, choice, and hope to achieve goals, the mastery and the autonomy you've just been saying, and the independence. Harm can start for the body's physiology and the brain's neurochemistry, however, when the stress becomes unrelenting or when no achievements allow congratulational variability. And so we're designed for short periods of stress as organisms, but we're also designed to have downtime when we can marshal our resources, when we can rest, digest, chill, repair, tend and befriend, when we can integrate those experiences. So if I put it another way, life is a journey of experiences, and we all have that. We all get those outer experiences. We also have to do inner work, which is the integrating of those experiences. And when there's a lot of change and threat and challenge around, that can feel really uncomfortable.
I think you've raised a really important point there, and it's something I've come across in other work around mental health, and indeed we see it in physical health, where those short-term stresses were designed for, and actually they seem to do us good almost. But if it goes on for long periods of time, then we get chronic overproduction of cortisol, we get a change in the HPA axis and various other things that is really bad for our immune system, our stress levels, and other things.
Thank you, Peter. Can we just unpack HPA axis?
You unpack it, Andrew. You are our expert on this.
Hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. And this takes us straight into talking about the body's engine management system, the autonomic nervous system, which has two parts. Essentially, it has an action part, a doing part, and a repair part, a being part, when the integration repair and other things happens. So the action part, Peter, can you remember which part of the autonomic nervous system that is?
Oh my goodness. I'm a little rusty on this. I will say parasympathetic and be shot down.
No, you're not shot down. Let's just take off the para though, because okay. The action part is the sympathetic. So nothing to do with sympathy. So that's our action part. And all mammals, of course, have got this autonomic nervous system, the same as human beings do, because we're mammals as well. And the parasympathetic is the being part. And action, when we feel safe, allows us to be creative and to explore, to be curious. Being when we feel safe allows these six important functions to happen: rest, digest, chill, repair, tend and befriend, and that's when we integrate the experiences that we've had. When we feel unsafe, when fear starts to go around the system, on parasympathetic we can go into a freeze, a sort of rabbit in the headlights type response, and in sympathetic we either go for fight or for flight, and we experience fear and anxiety. And the main hormones in the sympathetic nervous system are adrenaline and noradrenaline and cortisol, as you so rightly mentioned just a few moments ago. That is very useful for short-term bursts of activity. Long-term, being on high levels, elevated levels of adrenaline and noradrenaline, and especially cortisol, those raised levels long-term are unhelpful to the body. In fact, they're absolutely harmful to the body.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a really good theoretical overview of what's going on. Let's wind back to practicals. I'm stuck in this rabbit in the headlights, freeze, fight or flight, or whichever response I'm doing to overwhelming stress. What should I do? What are the basic first steps to get me out of this situation?
Really interesting, Peter. So are these the freeze response is the play dead response and hope that the predator walks away or runs away, sniffs you and thinks, well, this one's not worth eating, so I'll go away. Animals go into the freeze response as we do. If you see a dog coming out of water, it shakes itself, and that's what animals do when they come out of the freeze response. They discharge the shock. Now, most human beings don't do this, so I would recommend that we consider making sure we move and maybe have a little shake, and dancing is very good. Anything that moves your body. The sympathetic state of fight and flight with the raised adrenaline is designed to make us able to run or to fight now. unfortunately, if we're in the workplace or if we're driving our cars, that's not a wise thing to do. But the neurochemistry, the neurochemicals still want us to do that. So we need to burn off that adrenaline at some point. And if we don't burn off that adrenaline with physical activity, with using our muscles in some way, shape or form, then we end up with raised blood pressure and with a whole load of other sequelae.
That's really interesting. And it's something I've become interested in, the idea that sometimes when you're in a situation, it's not a question of changing the way you think. It's the way of changing what you do, and your brain catches up with you afterwards. And that's kind of what you're suggesting, isn't it, Andrew?
It is, Peter. So we're designed to move. So muscle activity is really important. We're also designed to cultivate stillness. And I believe you have an interest in this area from your work on martial arts, which I would imagine is not just about fight and flight. It's about poise and inner stillness and efficiency of being. But perhaps you could say a little bit more about that.
Yes, I've found it extremely useful. I'm rubbish at it. It took me 15 years to get to black belt in karate. But you learn to have your brain focused so that you're just thinking about that one action that you're doing, and that you go from complete stillness to 100% committed action. And there's a Zen Buddhist saying, isn't there? If you're riding a bicycle, if you ride, ride. If you fall off, fall off. Don't wobble. And martial arts is the same. You can't half punch somebody. You have to absolutely commit to do it from being completely still and relaxed. So if people haven't tried it, I thoroughly recommend any of the martial arts, really. Have you had a go, Andrew?
Not at martial arts, but I do some yoga. But it doesn't matter what you do, whether it's mindfulness, martial art, whether it's playing tennis, whether it's football. It doesn't matter what you do. There's always a tension there between doing and being in the right place at the right time. And I think an aspect of illness is something that applies to all human beings, wherever we are on a neurodivergent or a neurotypical spectrum, because we've all got the same autonomic nervous system. So, Peter, can I invite you to put both feet flat on the floor to allow your spine to be comfortable and to take three slow, regular, rhythmic, calming breaths using your abdominal muscles, using your diaphragm. Excuse me. And the reason I'm inviting you to do that is because that drops you straight into parasympathetic calm, away from the adrenaline of sympathetic overdrive. Because we know that adrenaline puts blood pressure up, puts pulse up, puts breathing rate up, respiratory rate up, and puts us into upper chest. Whereas just taking control of our breathing puts us back into a calm state. And so many of us either forget to breathe, or we gasp, or we have long gaps, or we breathe very rapidly and chaotically because we're on sympathetic overdrive. So it's just quite useful to be quite calm and to use that exercise of inner stillness. And there are apps. I think there's a Headspace app, but there is a great deal on mindfulness on YouTube and literature elsewhere. And I suppose if we follow the breath and if we become conscious of it, we're conscious almost of life with a capital L living through us, rather than getting stuck in a separated, fearful, worried ego state. And when we're in that state of calm, then everything becomes more noticeable around us. We hear sounds, we feel tastes, and we can notice those things. Peter.
Yes, and mindfulness is one of those buzzwords, isn't it, which a lot of people think is a bit fluffy. But coming back to martial arts, it really just means living in the moment, not being distracted by other things. And I can tell you that if you mess up and get a punch in the nose, that's really quite a good incentive to live in the moment and give what you're doing 100% attention.
Yes. So we're talking about change and coping with change in an uncertain world. we're mentioning feelings. Now, we have important feelings. We've talked about fear and anxiety here. And of course, too much adrenaline can make us feel anxious. Just interestingly, Peter, is too much coffee, too much caffeine and energy drinks and tea, which all contain caffeine, can make us anxious. Interesting biochemical effect there.
And I'm sure you've seen it, Andrew. I've certainly seen particularly long distance drivers who have energy drinks to keep them going. And then they will present with panic attacks and palpitations, rapid heartbeat, anxiety, sleeplessness, all the things we associate with anxiety. And if you get them to cut down and stop their energy drinks, then all of those things go away.
You're absolutely right. And also the other thing that people suffer from with excessive caffeine is inability to sleep because it blocks the adenosine receptors and we end up with problems. But how are we going to cope? How are we going to manage with these changes? Well, one of the great privileges of being human is that we feel emotions. Sometimes, though, those emotions either feel unpleasant or they feel overwhelming. I have to say, I'm a bit of a coward. I don't like sitting with pain or unpleasant emotions. I'd like to find answers. And I think we do all want to find answers. We want to find answers with our heads, but we have to find answers with our hearts as well, because a clever head doesn't necessarily sort out a distressed heart. So we have to break down the challenges into little chunks. We have to acknowledge these emotions and think about what they're trying to tell us sometimes, because actually emotions are often preparation states that help us move through change, not just the pleasant ones, but the difficult ones. And this is where talking to somebody else, whether a professional or a friend or a colleague or anyone, can really help. And maybe even expressive writing or creative writing to write about an issue, because when we write things down, very often they become clearer, or certainly when we talk to somebody else about an issue, it can come into focus and we stop ourselves circling round and round. Any thoughts on that, Peter?
Yes. Although unpleasant emotions are difficult to live with, in a way they are a trigger to make us change and improve things, aren't they? So they have a very valuable use.
Absolutely. In fact, Trevor Griffiths would say unpleasant loss emotions of grief and distress and anger are actually helping us to reconnect with life itself, because the shock of a big change disconnects us from the flow of life. And we know how we take a on the in-breath, and what happens is that gasp stops the regular flow of the breath, and we disconnect from the flow, we disconnect from situations, we move into fear. And so those unpleasant emotions help guide us towards reconnection. And Trevor talks about them as shock, followed by denial. We then may experience anger and or guilt. And at that point, we may go into a flat state of low energy where we feel sad and maybe depressed. And from that point, we then will either try and bargain to get back what we've lost, or we'll let it go and move into acceptance. Those are his seven stepping stones to cope with change. And something I never knew, Peter, is that each of those states aren't particularly negative states, or can be negative states, but they have useful purposes and are meanings.
Absolutely. And in the same way that if emotional pain drives us to certain behaviors, physical pain is also protective. And we know, don't we, Andrew, that people who lose pain reception, Charcot joints, then they suffer damage because they don't take measures to stop themselves being injured.
You're quite right. If we think about shock, which is the first emotion that people often feel, the meaning is, I'm doubting my resources. I don't know how to cope with this. And the useful purpose is, well, stop. Find a safe place to review your resources. And a safe place can be a physical place, it can be a relationship, or it can be a state of mind. And perhaps we should all think about what our safe places are: a physical place, a relationship, or frame of mind. Because when we find that safe place, which could well include feet flat on the floor, spine comfortable, and three slow, regular breaths, we find ourselves in a place of stillness where we can problem solve, where we can look forward much more effectively.
That's good. So that's shock.
Well, the next state that many people feel is denial. And denial, of course, is I can carry on regardless. If I ignore this, it'll go away. And I think many of us use denial and hope that difficult things will resolve themselves. Well, the useful purpose of denial is shelve it for now and keep your energy going for what's important. Don't try and do everything, whereas some of us want to save the world, want to do everything, want to make everything right, but none of us can do everything all at once.
Absolutely. And again, there are physical equivalents of that, where people who are injured in battle, say, don't actually feel the pain until afterwards, because they have to get out of the danger and ignore the signals from their body. So yes, again, it has a value.
Absolutely. We move on to so those are the two turning points as we recognize loss. As we try and prevent loss and try and control the situation, we may feel anger and we externalize that. So anger is meaning I want to prevent the loss of something important to me. And of course, that's really difficult when somebody that we love has died or something that's happened that's irreparable. The useful purpose is the energy to take action out into the world and to change aspects of the world, but to transform that anger. Anger, of course, transformed is creativity. And so if we do feel frustrated by change and loss, our challenge is to not to just fester with lots of frustration, anger, and problems, but to actually change that.
And my stress levels are now rising because our time limit is ticking. So could you take us through the other stages in a fairly brief way, please, Andrew?
Really quickly. So guilt, I need to question if something I did caused it, and then that's learning what else I could do to change. And then bargaining is to try and get back what we've lost, and acceptance is letting go. So I suppose in summary, Peter, self-care is really important. We haven't touched hugely on this, but keeping our fuel tanks full, times of inner stillness, making sure we sleep well, looking after our own emotional well-being is important through times of change. Seeking support from other people is really important, and trying to find the silver lining in the challenges to try and find an opportunity for growth is important. Little steps rather than big steps. Adaptability is important, and keep ourselves going gently and just be kind to oneself. And as you said about social media and other things, don't expose ourselves to too much negativity. Keep positive. Be grateful for something every day, 3 or 4 things every day.
That all sounds good. So I hope the people listening have got some very practical tips that they can take away when they feel overwhelmed and under stress, as we all do from time. And maybe also realize that those negative feelings that we work through do actually have a positive function as well. So, Andrew, I wonder if I can invite you to take up our producer David's suggestion of the 3-3-3 rule of mindfulness. Would you like to take us through? You have a very calming voice, and I'm sure that will send people on their way in a relaxed state.
Thank you, Peter. So if I invite you and our listeners, as long as you're not driving or using heavy machinery, to feet flat on the floor, spine comfortable, breathe in and out through your nose, and just follow your breath down into your body and then let it go. And allow that to happen 3 times. And then from that still state, just look around you and find 3 objects, 3 things that catch your attention, and notice everything that you can of those. Allow yourself to be mindful, to be in the moment, as you said, Peter, to be in the present, in the now regarding that. And then just listen to 3 sounds and notice 3 feelings. With the days getting longer at the moment, we're recording as the days are getting longer, it's lovely to hear birds outside sometimes, as well as other sounds. And so that just allows ourselves to be more in the present and to allow ourselves to come back to ourselves. Can I give a little plug for a resource that covers quite a lot of the material that we've mentioned?
Please.
So our resource, Health and Self-Care for Health Professionals, applies to everybody, and it's a free download from the web, www.healthandself.care, C-A-R-E. There's a free book download there, and I was using some material from Emotional Logic, which is described on pages 115 to 125.
Fantastic. Thank you very much indeed, Andrew. The alternative resource is people are welcome to come and try and beat me up at karate, which is another way of improving their mindfulness. But thank you, Andrew. Thank you, David. And thank you to everyone for listening. And I hope you found that useful. Goodbye.
Go well.